Dinesh Sabu sat down to talk with me at his place of work, Kartemkin Films, who happens to also be the distribution company for his documentary film, Unbroken Glass. Dinesh candidly talks about the process of making the film and how it has affected not only him, but his siblings. You see, Dinesh's parents came to the U.S. from India, had five children, Dinesh being the youngest, and then when he was 6 years old, he lost both of his parents for different reasons. His father from cancer, and his mother not long after, as she committed suicide, a result of having schizophrenia. Stay tuned to hear Dinesh talk about his feelings and share his hope for his film and his future.
I didn't know you were part of this family here.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what inspired you to say, hey, I've got a story to tell? And was it through the encouragement of the people here that you made this film? Or did you have this before you even came on board here?
Well, I definitely was interested in documentary and visual storytelling beforehand. And I had this kind of idea that I needed to look into my past. I didn't think I could do it responsibly as a documentary until my time here at Kartemkin as an intern and really getting to know the filmmakers and the process and seeing a lot of the films. I was really concerned that if I were to turn this into a film, it would be somehow exploiting the story. Was there a way to do it responsibly, both to the subject matter, my right. parents, and my siblings, and the people who are in the film? Was there a way to do that? And I think the stuff I learned as an intern and then on staff really gave me that confidence to really pursue it as a film. Okay. I think prior to that, I was thinking, you know, maybe I would do like an audio documentary or maybe do some writing about the subject, maybe right. turn it into a book or something. The ambition of the project kind of grew really organically because it really started as an excuse, because I didn't really know it was going to be like a feature-length film when I started it out. I really just wanted a way to talk to my siblings.
Okay.
I needed to go on this journey. I needed to find out who my parents were. And it wasn't the kind of conversation we could have just sitting with tea. The camera there, the film as an excuse, gave us the opportunity to have that conversation.
Right, right. Was there anything that happened in your life that made you, you know, go over the tipping point of saying, yes, I need to actually do something about this?
You know, there wasn't a single event, but it's the kind of thing, these questions followed me into adulthood. So as you know, my parents passed away when I was six. And, you know, I had a pretty good childhood, as good as one could have. But I, you know, there was this kind of giant gap where the story of my parents needed to be.
Right.
And finally, I made it to age 23, 24, and it was like, you know what? Like, I need some answers.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a single event, but it was just the culmination of this growing curiosity.
Okay. If this were to happen now, I would think that DCFS would be involved in saying, oh, you know, these girls are too young to take care of these kids.
Right.
Did anything like that happen? Or do you have any remembrance of any of those kind of things happening?
You know, it didn't. And but basically, before my mother passed away, she made arrangements for my eldest sister to be our guardian in the event of anything that happened. At the time, it seemed like just a prudent thing to do. We had just lost our father. You know, what if something happened to our mother? Looking back, though, and you know, counselors and suicide researchers will speak about this, that oftentimes a warning sign is when somebody starts making plans.
Yeah.
And looking back with the advantage of hindsight, it's almost like that was part of her plan.
Okay.
So the concrete result of that was there was no state involvement.
Okay.
Because she passed away, and then, you know, legally my sister was, you know, she was 21. She was an adult, legally at least.
Right.
And so, yeah, then the responsibility of raising us kind of passed to her.
Did your sisters continue doing any family traditions that you used to do?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of, I mean, in terms of that, there was a lot of continuity. At the same time, though, we all grew up really quickly right after it happened. You know, we all, and there's a scene in the film where I talk a little bit about the responsibilities that we all took on.
Right. Making dinner.
Making dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, there were five of us. We would each take one night of the week, make dinner, things like that. So you know, that was a real change. That took some real getting used to. That took some real adjustment. We still celebrated Christmas. We still observed some of the major Indian holidays, Diwali, etc., Rakhi. So, yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot of continuity, as best we could.
Okay.
As best we could.
There were a lot of very poignant parts of this film, and, you know, your heart breaks. As an outsider looking at this, it's like, oh, my gosh, it's amazing. All five of these kids are absolutely fine, and you were put under some pretty dire circumstances with not having parents around and the circumstance of your mom being schizophrenic.
Right.
One of the most powerful moments in the film to me was when you sat down and talked with your, I think it was your cousin and your aunt and your uncle who's schizophrenic.
Right. Right.
It was so bold and clear how they communicated to you how they felt about your uncle and how your uncle was struggling still yet this day with his disease or disorder.
Absolutely.
Tell me what was going through your mind, because there's got to be a part of you that you're the filmmaker, but you're also the recipient of this information.
Right.
How do you focus those two things or break those two things down as you're listening, and tell me what you were thinking then?
So it was in the moment, and you see it play out in the film, it was pure shock. It was really, you know, learning these things about my family's history was really, you know, it took several weeks, if not months, after getting back from that shoot to really just kind of process everything that I had learned. In the moment, I should also say I was more of a subject in that scene than I was a filmmaker. You know, I was working with a really talented cinematographer who's now based in L.A., Tom Bailey,
okay,
who did a lot of verite filming, especially on Cartoon films. And so he was able to just kind of capture the scene as it unfolded, and I was freed to participate in just the dialogue in learning about my extended family. But I do want to just revisit to what you were saying earlier. I mean, it is, you know, about how the five of us, you know, we all seem pretty fine. And I think you're largely correct. You know, we've all, you know, kind of adjusted to adulthood, and we're all, you know, thriving in our own particular ways. That said, I don't want to minimize the legacy of surviving this trauma, you know, piecing oneself together after this. You know, that said, one thing I really do believe in is, you know, we are more than what has been done to us.
Right.
We can transcend the events that have happened.
I think it was your brother that you were interviewing, and he said, "I'm done. I don't want you to interview."
Yeah,
there
was a lot of tension. Yeah.
And how has that been resolved, or what does he think of this film?
Yeah. So I had a chance to, as I was putting it together, you know, I was still their brother. You know, I was still, you know, calling them every couple of weeks and just kind of checking in, and we would still get together at the holidays. So, you know, there is that moment where Sandeep decides to stop participating in the film, but, you know, a few months later, he kind of mellowed out, and he was, you know, maybe, I think at some point he was actually even interested in being interviewed again. It didn't quite work out. I think the film, as you see, we kind of go in a different direction at that point. But it was important for me, as I was finishing it up, as I was putting together a finished feature doc, for me to have the blessing of my siblings. For me to, because it's their story too, right? So I screened a rough cut with each of them, and it was important for me to be in the same room with them and to be able to talk to them afterwards, just to get their feedback, their thoughts, those kind of things. So I was able to show it to all of my siblings, and they all really, really appreciate it. They all really like it. And I think for some of them, it took seeing the finished film to really understand what I was trying to do with it. But yeah, unfortunately, I do have their blessing now.
Okay.
They're very, very happy with the film. I'm also their baby brother, so they, I think, on some
and you
level,
always will be.
Exactly. Yeah, even as a 32-year-old. And so on some level, I can't help but wonder, like, oh, I wonder if they're indulging me. Probably a little bit, but I'll take it.
What was one of the things that was most striking to you that you learned about both? It's not just your mother, but it's your father in dealing with her disease, and then he had to deal with the fact that he had cancer.
Right.
So what is it that you learned most about your parents that you had no idea beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of very specific details, but I would say, like, to generalize an answer to that question, you know, I started making this film when I was 24. I'm pretty young. And at that point, I think I had this really almost kind of mythic understanding of their story, of their lives. And it all seemed almost preordained, right? The way that I understood their story, the way we told the story. But really diving into the nitty-gritty mm-hmm. and talking to people about year to year or moment to moment what their decision making was like, just realizing that they led these really complicated lives, and that just like everybody else, they kind of were just making it up as they went along.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was also just, you know, learning how to become an adult, like being an adult at 24 and realizing that, hey, a lot of life is just, you know, you kind of improvise, right? And then applying that understanding kind of retroactively to my parents' story. I think that was like a huge humanizing kind of revelation, realizing that they, yes, there are these kind of mythic things that happen, and in some ways they've always will be these mythic figures, but they are, yeah, they're human.
Right.
They are, you know, and they made a lot of mistakes, and really understanding the mistakes they made through the lens of their humanity.
I'm sure you have researched schizophrenia to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And the little bit that I know about it, it affects about 3.2 million people in the U.S.
Yeah, about 1% of the population.
Yeah, which 1% doesn't sound like a big number until you translate it to the actual number
Absolutely.
Of lives that it affects. And then not just those lives that occurs, but all the extended family
the
and
families,
the friends
yeah.
and that it affects. What is something that you want people to take away from this film?
So, I mean, that's a really keen point that, you know, schizophrenia, it's not just that one person who's suffering from it. It's the whole family. And I would like to generalize about mental illness in general, because yes, this film deals with specifically my mother's schizophrenia, but it also deals with surviving from suicide, overcoming childhood trauma, you know, managing depression as an adult. All of these are mental illnesses. All mm-hmm. of this has to do with mental health. And I would really love for people, you know, watching the film to get a more nuanced picture of how these conditions affect whole families and communities.
Right.
Really.
Has anything about making this film changed you as a person and how you look to your future?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, again, it's hard to disentangle the film from just the very earnest process of going on that journey and finding out there all these revelations and coming to terms with it. I mean, yes, we're documenting it in the film, but that was happening kind of concurrently.
Right.
And it's also hard to disentangle from just the normal maturation that happens when, you know, when you're that age. So it's really hard to separate them out, but they're all kind of, it will always be kind of of a piece
mm-hmm.
to me. That said, you know, just kind of coming to terms with these things, coming to terms and, you know, putting these things behind me was huge.
Do you worry about having schizophrenia, developing it, or if you meet somebody and how do you explain that heredity issue and then having kids? It's kind of a three-part question there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's definitely something I thought a lot about. And I had read pretty early in my life, I think I was doing like a high school project and I chose schizophrenia and mm-hmm. I was doing a ton of research on it. And I read somewhere that in men, it presents by the age of 27.
Right.
I mean, it's possible it'll happen afterwards, but I think the vast majority of cases, 27. And so in my youthful kind of drama, I just thought, oh man, like this might happen. This is all eventually going to happen to me. But if I can make it to 27, I'll be safe.
Right.
And those years leading up to 27, it really looked like almost like a life buoy. If I could just make it to my 27th birthday. Mm-hmm. There's a version of this film that would have been more about that preoccupation with mental illness. But I'm kind of glad it's there in the back burner. You can I kind of hint at it.
Yeah.
I kind of talk about, you know, this being in my blood, etc.
Yeah.
But it's because the film's about a lot more than that. And, you know, I honestly haven't thought that far ahead.
Okay. Sounds good.
I think it's important to note that there are a lot with genetic research,
mm-hmm.
we know more and more about hereditary illnesses.
Right. And how you're predisposed or triggers
exactly,
for them. Yeah.
Exactly. Various cancers, et cetera.
Yep.
And it is kind of changing the way we look at our health and the way we look at
you know, having kids, etc. I don't know if there's a particularly good way to go about it. I would think that whomever I decide to start a family with would be, you know, mature enough to understand that this is a, yes, this is a genetic condition, but if you have a predisposition, there's no guarantee that you're going to have it.
Right.
There are also environmental factors, there are lifestyle factors. And, you know, there are a whole host of other genetic diseases that one needs to think about.
Given the research that we've had in recent years and the medications that are available and the psychotherapy that is available to address this issue, do you think that if your mother would have lived 20 years later, that she would have had a different outcome?
Yeah, that's a really perceptive question, because you're absolutely right. You know, this is a story that took place in the 1970s and the 1980s. Mm-hmm. You know, she passed away in 1991. And yeah, even later in the 90s, there were some really radical new antipsychotic drugs that came out.
Right.
And our understanding of the illness has changed. And our understanding of the need for, you know, talk therapy and various other therapies in addition to medication have changed quite a bit. I do have to wonder if, you know, I think that side of her story might be different.
Yeah.
But one thing, and this is part of the reason I'm so passionate about getting this film in front of audiences, is one thing I see that hasn't changed a ton is the stigma associated with it.
Yeah.
Particularly in the South Asian community, the Asian American community, but also just the general public. You know, there's such baggage around, you know, coming forward and coming out as somebody who suffers from a mental illness. There's such baggage around, you know, seeking help, reaching out to somebody for help. You know, we think of these things in these really almost puritanic ways. Oh, it's a sign of weakness.
Right.
If you need to go see a therapist, or if you suffer from depression. Even just being able to admit in the film that I suffer from depression, it was a hard thing for me to do. And so, yes, I think you're right. The medicine has changed. The science has changed quite a bit in really positive ways.
Mm-hmm.
But culturally, it'd be great to see some movement as well.
So you think there's a big disparity still between the two?
I do.
Okay.
I do. It happened.
Right. Do you think that different school programs are making a difference or can make a difference with that? I think about social workers in a school and suicide rates and bullying and issues that happen with that. And, I mean, that's where I think we need to start is at that level for education and making sure that people aren't suffering from this and helping them as opposed to putting a stigma upon them.
Absolutely. I mean, this is such a huge point. And it almost deserves its own documentary, its own treatment in a documentary. Because you're right, bullying and suicide and even just like, you know, I've been screening the film and talking, just the amount of stress that students are under,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there are a lot of undergrad suicides that take place at, like, elite institutions.
Sure.
I did a screening with a group out in the Bay Area, and one of the women that organized it, Dr. Helen Hsu, she had done a lot of research on suicide clusters,
mm-hmm.
in particularly in Palo Alto in the Bay Area, where these kids are very, very bright, have access to tremendous amounts of opportunity,
right.
but just the pressure that's put on them is almost unbearable. So it is really interesting. I think awareness, you know, it's great to be able to raise awareness with the film I made,
mm-hmm.
and it's great to be able to have these conversations. So we're hoping to get the film kind of really prevalent on college campuses.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so the idea being like, yeah, having these conversations, using my story to talk about suicide.
Right.
But yeah, I think there's more work to be done. I think, you know, there are some really great films. You know, Bully is a great example.
Right.
And I think there could be even more work done around this area of suicide, especially among young people. You know, the film, it touches upon all of these social issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
It touches, and we've addressed a lot of them, right? Suicide, schizophrenia, childhood trauma, immigration. But ultimately, what I like to tell people is that it's a film about a family. And I hope that people are able to identify with what happens in the film, even if you don't have necessarily suicide or schizophrenia or an immigrant background. I think we all have experiences with our families, with our siblings,
mm-hmm.
with our loved ones. And my goal was to make just a really honest film about that touches on these issues. So I do hope that your listeners will, you know, hear us talk and find something interesting and come out and see it. everybody goes on a journey in their 20s. I just happened to make a film about it, you know, but I think a lot of people, and I talk to a lot of young Indian Americans, like my age or younger,
mm-hmm.
and the stuff where that talking about, you know, identity and immigration and those kind of things. But I think just in general, like it's just, it's this, you know, what one needs to do to kind of feel comfortable with oneself,
yeah.
with to fully mature.
Absolutely.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Dinesh Sabu talk about his film Unbroken Glass, which will open at the Siskel Film Center this Friday, February 17th, and play through February 23rd. That's Thursday, February 23rd. For more information about getting tickets to this film, go to www.siskelfilmcenter.org/unbrokenglass. If you're not in the Chicago area and would like more information as to where you can see this film, go ahead and take a look at the film's website, www.unbrokenglassfilm.com. That's unbrokenglassfilm.com. And for a full review of the film and links to the interview, go to realhonestreviews.com. That's reelhonestreviews.com. I'm Pamela Powell for Real Honest Reviews.